Okay, Doves, I heard you say there's no radio right now, and typically my friend Ruby listens to me on the radio. However, today she's coming over to my house. She should be here any minute, so that's good for her. I don't know who else listens on the radio. I don't think I have anything to say. I was looking to see if I had anything to say before we get started, and there's just nothing at all coming to mind. So we are here for the seven steps to awakening, and we're going to begin with quote number 112. So what I am doing right now is just giving a link to number 112 in the room. And I guess I don't need to say, if you're on the radio, here's how you get there. Oh, it says I'm not authorized to send a URL. It's because I forgot to come in as admin. Chotomate kudasai, as they say in Japan, which means very, very politely, please wait a minute. Let me get out and come back in. Let's see, Pal Talk. Okay.
Even you, Blackie, I know that you hate to do anything, but you could be an admin. You know, that would be really helpful, because it's always helpful to have an admin in the room. Number two, I wanted to say that if anyone feels that they want the radio in the room and it's not here, anyone can send a message either to Revs Deb and Paul Phelps on Facebook, which is the fastest way to get their attention, or to Rev Deb at miraclesone.org. And that's the fastest way, because I know, like Deb said, well, she didn't have the radio and she feels lost without the radio. But instead of coming to the room and saying you don't have the radio, it's so much faster just to send a message to Rev Deb, because she's the only one that can put the radio in the room. I can't. I have to do the same thing everyone else does, which is send a message. Okay, without further ado, Regina Dawn Akers, it's the top of the hour. The mic is all yours. Thank you, Regina.
Yeah, I guess as it works out, I didn't end up not taking it early. but, you know, I just heard an interpretation of what Dove said. And, you know, the interpretation was that, you know, we don't need to use Dove for things that we can do ourselves. I think that some of us get very dependent on Dove. I know in the past I would call him and say, hey, have you got so-and-so's phone number? instead of just, you know, finding the phone number myself. And you can imagine how many of us there are and only one of him. You can imagine how busy he gets if we, you know, call him for every little thing. So, you know, he was just now saying, if you ever notice the radio is not in the room and you'd like the radio, you can email RevDeb at miraclesone.org. Dev says he doesn't mind doing it for us. It's just faster if we do it directly. We don't have to go through him. It's like adding a middleman. But, yeah, I think it's okay to be courteous of Dev's time, too. That feels okay in my heart. And if we can do something ourselves instead of using Dev, I say let's do it. All right, in that little bit of stall time, Ruby showed up.
Yeah.
So Ruby is here. And Jacqueline is here, so I am not alone today. And again, we are down here in my basement, all nice and comfortable. We are going to be starting with the seven steps to awakening, quote number 112. And I did post that link, but I will post it again. As typical, what we're going to do is just start with a few moments of silence. So why don't we do that? Thank you. Amen. All right. Hello, Deb. All right. So I'm going to start by reading from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 112. And you know, it seems like for a few weeks at least, we've been reading from the Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj portion of Step 1, and that's still where we are. So the quote is from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, and this is the quote. The idea that you know what is true is dangerous, for it keeps you imprisoned in the mind. It is when you do not know that you are free to investigation. Again, the idea that you know what is true is dangerous, for it keeps you imprisoned in the mind. It is when you do not know that you are free to investigate. And I notice at least Monica has entered the room since I posted the quote, so here is the quote again. And then going to the journal, this is what I wrote. The sense of I know is dangerous because it keeps you attached to a strong sense of false self. When I is satisfied with a strong sense of false self, there is no looking to discover who I truly is. There is no looking for the source or beginning of I. The beginning of I is home, so that is true I. Let go of the strong sense of false self by letting go of all attachment to I know. Now, of course, we've all felt that we know things before. You know, we've done that lots and lots and lots of times. So hopefully it's not difficult to remember a time when you really felt that you knew something. Maybe you really felt that you knew that someone should not be trusted. You know, maybe you really felt that you knew who should be president of the United States. Maybe you really felt that you knew what a friend of yours should do because it was in their best interest. You know, there's just, you know, try and recall any time at all when you really felt that you knew something. And then in that recollection, just notice how strong your sense of self is when you have that strong feeling of I know. You know, if I say I know what's best for my friend and I'm giving my friend advice, in that moment there's a strong sense of me, of who I am, but it's the false self. But there's a strong sense of who I am in that I know. And that's really what this is telling us. This is telling us that I know is dangerous. And the reason it's dangerous is because it keeps us very locked into this strong sense of self. But that strong sense of self is tied to the false self and not the true self. And as a result, we don't inquire for or look in the direction of true self. You know, A Course in Miracles asks us to find the blocks to love's presence. And A Course in Miracles spends a lot of time focusing on, you know, grievances, which probably is where most of us need to start. But nowhere does A Course in Miracles, I don't think, claim that a grievance is the only block to love's presence. You know, there are others that become revealed. This idea that I know, this strong sense of I. That's really the obstacle. That strong sense of I is actually what's emphasized by a grievance. So grievances are dangerous because they give us a strong sense of I. And I know is dangerous because it gives us that same strong sense of I. So just as we were taught by A Course in Miracles to learn to forgive or let go of grievances, We also want to learn to forgive or let go of the sense of I know. So again, number 112, the sense of I know is dangerous because it keeps you attached to a strong sense of false self. When I is satisfied with a strong sense of false self, there is no looking to discover who I truly is. There is no looking for the source or beginning of I. The beginning of I is home, and so that is true I. Let go of the strong sense of false self by letting go of all attachment to I know. And I see that ACIM Gather Radio is in the house. So we are on the radio now. What we can do is scroll down to just above the dark gray area. Click on number 113. If there is anyone just joining us on the radio, we are looking at the 7 Steps to Awakening and my personal journal, full of my reflections on this book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. If you happen to want to read along with this in my journal, you just go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And once you get to RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, you will go to step 1, which is up on the menu bar. And then because we are at number 113, you're going to go to E, number 101 to 125, and find your way to number 113. For those of you who are in the Pal Talk room, I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste the link to number 113 for you now. And then I'm going to read from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, quote number 113, which is from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Words can only give you the idea, and the idea is not the experience. Again, words can only give you the idea, and the idea is not the experience. So looking at the journal, number 113, understanding concepts gives a false sense of I know. A false sense of I know is not the experience of truth. It is only a pale imitation of truth with ignorance as its source. Ignorance is not knowledge, therefore, understanding concepts is not knowing truth. Why then waste time and effort trying to understand concepts? There is no reason for this effort. Let go of trying to understand. Instead, be with whatever is in peace. For those of you who are not familiar with the 7 Steps to Awakening, it's really only teaching us 7 things. That's why it's called the 7 Steps. And within each step, the one teaching or the one objective is repeated over and over and over again in a myriad of ways. And the purpose of step 1 is to teach us that the mind can never learn awakening. And it's guiding us to let go of that effort of trying to learn awakening. And I think it's, this book was not necessarily targeted to people from A Course in Miracles community, but I think that it's, that's a perfect first step for the Course in Miracles community as a whole, because, of course, you know, there's always exceptions to every generalization. But I do think it's a fair generalization to say the Course in Miracles community as a whole has spent a lot of time trying to learn awakening. We took the course, which was actually meant as a practice, but we spent a significant amount of time trying to intellectually understand the concepts. And I think the evidence has shown this is not an effective practice, trying to understand concepts. You know, depending on how long we've been with the course, you know, we may know that you can be with the course 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, 15 years, 10 years, 5 years, whatever. Really focusing on understanding the concepts and still have all the same old grievances, still have all the same old attachments, still have as much upset in your day as you ever did. So I think evidence has really shown us that the effort put into learning awakening is just wasted effort. And I think, to be honest, based on my experience with us, there's a turning around happening now. It's a natural turning around that is occurring as we are all seeing it doesn't work that way. Some of us may be using the course differently. I've actually heard a few people this year who have been with the course for a number of years and, you know, have done the workbook many, many times, say to me, this is the first year I've really done it. So some of that turning around is actually happening still with the course in hand. Some of us, the turning around is happening by actually being called to what appears to be other teachings, but we know ultimately they're the same. But, you know, the best way to do is to put down the book that seemed to tempt our intellect and to go to another form of the same teaching. But what I do sense, at least in many of us, especially in the ones that I seem to be around, is a very strong realization that learning awakening, it doesn't work that way. And so we are abandoning that effort, which means we're really aligned with step one of the seven steps to awakening, because that's what step one is all about. It is asking us to abandon that effort of learning awakening. So again, number 113 in the journal says, understanding concepts gives a false sense of I know. We know about this too. We know that sometimes when we do get a strong sense of understanding about what's in A Course in Miracles, what that actually does is boost the ego. Because now I know. I know what this means, right? I can teach others. I can explain. And it's really a stronger sense of ego. Understanding concepts gives a false sense of I know. A false sense of I know is not the experience of truth, and we have realized that. It is only a pale imitation of truth with ignorance as its source. Ignorance is not knowledge. Therefore, understanding concepts is not knowing truth. Why, then, waste time and effort trying to understand concepts? There is no reason for this effort. Let go of trying to understand. Instead, be with whatever is in peace. The seven steps to awakening seems to point to being as a much more useful way of spending time than trying to understand. Just learning to be with whatever is. Let's scroll down just above the dark gray area on the left and click on number 114. And I will go to number 114 in the book. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. It is earnestness that will take you through, not cleverness. Your own or another's. That's an interesting twist at the end, I think. He says, it is earnestness that will take you through, not cleverness. Your own or another's. Some of us have a tendency, you know, it's like a You know, it's just a tendency that's built into the personality, I guess. That when we find someone that we think has an understanding of truth, we make ourselves feel good by attaching ourselves to that one. And this has gone on for, you know, millenniums. Attaching ourselves and being around that one that we have perceived understands truth makes us feel good. And there may still be some, you know, some sense of practice that goes on with us, but lots of times there actually isn't. Actually, the practice becomes weak, and we become involved in, you know, the traveling to follow that person, or if we're lucky enough to get into the inner circle, the work it takes to keep that person's name out there and keep that person traveling or having people come to them. And again, the symptom of this, and this is only if you want self-honesty, the symptom of this is there may be a feeling of bliss that occurs when you're in the presence of one that you really feel knows. But the symptom that you have sort of abandoned your own practice for some kind of a false high is that your sense of judgment, your sense of grievances can remain the same. I'm kind of reminded of Ram Dass right now, who said something about if you think you're enlightened, you should go stay with your parents for a while. And that's actually, I think, a fairly good recommendation. When you are in a special place, in an inner circle, around one that you really think has achieved, there is this kind of a false high that can come that has nothing to do with true healing. And if you want to check your state of true healing, what you could do is leave that inner circle for a time. You can have every intention of going back if that's what you feel called to do, but leave that inner circle for a time and go back to a lifestyle that's much closer to the one that you were unhappy in before. And see if you can be happy in that lifestyle now. And if immediately, you know, all of your old grievances, all of your old situations return, then you probably have a pretty clear indication that you were actually participating in escapism instead of healing. And that's a good thing to realize. I mean, that's a good thing to realize because then you can, you know, kind of start all over again. So, earnestness, right? Earnestness. And again, that earnestness is keeping after, in whatever way we are guided to, keeping after what needs to be healed in us. It is earnestness that will take you through, not cleverness, not your own or another's. Okay, let's look at number 114 in the journal. Do not be impressed with awakened thoughts, actions, or demonstrations. The sense of being impressed separates into those who have achieved and those who haven't. This idea of separation maintains the idea of personal selves and therefore hides the one unchanging reality. Instead of being impressed or prideful, watch the mind for every concept, idea, and judgment. See concepts, ideas, and judgments as that which blocks truth. Do not attach to them. Stay still. Stay unattached. Do not be anything. I love that last part. Do not be anything, especially when we're talking about either being the clever one. You know, you could be the one that is the teacher, or the perceived enlightened one, or you could be the follower, right? But either way, you may have an identification with that. You may say, I am the enlightened one, or I am the teacher. Or you may say, you know, I am in his inner circle. I am very close to him. This is saying, do not be anything. I think that's pretty clear instruction. And when I say that, I can feel that in my heart. That's an instruction that can be understood and followed. If I find my mind trying to attach to any idea of identification, and I compare it to that sentence, do not be anything, then it wakes me up from whatever idea of identification my mind was attempting to latch onto. So instead of being impressed with someone else's apparent enlightenment or knowledge, or instead of being prideful because of my own enlightenment or knowledge, my job is to watch the mind for every concept, idea, and judgment that blocks truth, and then just let them pass right on by without being attached to them. My job is to stay still, stay unattached, do not be anything. All right, let's scroll down. And just above the dark gray area on the left, you'll see number 115. Please click on that. First, looking at the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 115, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, there is no reality in ideas. That's the end of the quote. There is no reality in ideas. And now let's look at the journal, number 115. Oh, I love this one. How worthwhile are your deepest ideas of truth, or your most honored ideas of how things should be? Again, I'll ask that question. How worthwhile are your deepest ideas of truth, or your most honored ideas of how things should be? Their worth has no measure, because all ideas are false distraction. Search the mind for ideas that are given the highest of regard value. Search for all esteemed and honored thoughts and ideas, and then notice them as attachments that block truth. Look at them with this realization, and let all honor, all esteem, all value fade and disappear. Now, if you're like me, if I'm to sit here and say, okay, I want to search my mind for all of my most regarded thoughts, most regarded beliefs, most regarded ideas, well, not much is going to come to my mind. However, if I set the intention that I am willing to see those things, those ideas that I regard with a lot of value, and I just set the intention, you could say I turn it over to Holy Spirit and say, let me see. As I go through my day, they will pop up. I will notice as I'm saying something to my roommates, I'll say, oh my gosh, this is a highly regarded idea here I'm sharing. This is important to me. You know, I'll like see it as I'm saying it. You know, so I don't do very good personally with the search your mind thing. Not in, you know, sitting here, I wouldn't think of much. But they show up. But one thing that we obviously need here, if we want to see these highest regarded ideas and realize that they're just blocks to truth and let them go, is we have to have that willingness to let go of what we value the most. And I'll tell you, sometimes this is not easy. I've had experience of letting go of highly valued ideas, and I've even told you guys this story before, but I'm going to briefly tell the story again because it is an excellent example. Something that I valued highly was honesty. This doesn't mean that I was always honest, of course. You know, my dad once told me, if you ever meet a person who says they are completely honest, you know you've just met a liar. But in spite of the fact that I was not always completely honest, still, you know, the ego is complex and confusing. I valued honesty very, very much. And so what happened for me was there was a teacher that taught here in the room, A Course in Miracles gather, that I knew on a personal basis. And I had an experience with this teacher getting very, very, very angry at some people because they didn't want to keep his dog, you know, which made perfect sense. It wasn't their dog. They didn't want to keep it. You know, that was just, to me, it was like nothing. It's like, okay, they don't want to keep the dog. Okay, I got to find another answer then. But for some reason, this really upset him. And he was very angry, and he acted out in a very angry way. Well, about, you know, just a few weeks later, I heard him in ACIM Gather tell people that he never gets angry anymore. And I almost quit breathing. I could not believe that he was in ACIM Gather lying like that. I had just seen him very angry over something that wasn't even overly important. And it was a very difficult time for me at first, just that he you know, lied. My mind at this point went all the way back to, you know, if he can come in here and lie about who he is, misrepresent himself, is the truth even true? Or is everyone who claims to be enlightened, claims to have peace, are they just all liars? You know, I mean, it scared the shit out of me is what happened, to be honest. And in fact, the rest of that day, I just had to focus on letting go of my reaction. And the next morning, I had let it go enough that I was able to hear what Holy Spirit had to say to me. And what Holy Spirit said to me was that I had to let go of my value of honesty as something that I could hold up and then judge based on. Now, this for me was a core value. This for me separated the good from the bad. You know, this was really, really important, this honesty thing. And at first, it almost seemed sinful that Holy Spirit would ask me to let go of honesty. And again, he wasn't asking me not to be self-honest. He was asking me to let go of honesty as a value that I would use to judge others. Or even judge myself as better than others, because I'm more honest than you, right? But it seemed honesty was so core to me that letting go of honesty as a core value, there was almost a feeling of that's not right. Like somehow Holy Spirit's leading me down the wrong path now, you know, because you don't let go of that. I've seen other people, there was one woman I remember in particular in a course group who had the same reaction when we were talking about letting go of the idea that people could be guilty. You know, everyone is innocent. For some reason, that was a core value for her, guilt. And again, it was the same as honesty for me. It separated the good from the bad. You do have to know the difference between the guilty people and the innocent people. You do have to know the difference between what makes you guilty and what doesn't make you guilty. If you don't know the difference between guilt and innocent, then, you know, you'll just do anything. You'll murder people and say, hey, I'm innocent. You know, she became outraged at the course's teaching. And in fact, if I remember correctly, left the meeting. I'm not even remember if she ever came back. She may have come back one more time. So the point of these two stories is this. There are core values that we are holding on to that we really think are important, that somehow they keep the universe in order. And without these values held to, it's just going to be chaos, right? And these ideas are blocks to truth. And we want to have the willingness to notice those core values that we are holding on to, that we think keep the universe in order, that we think are more important than anything else. We want to have the willingness to see them and let them go as just ideas that are keeping us attached to the false self and the world as real. They're keeping us from truth is what they're doing. So again, number 115. How worthwhile are your deepest ideas of truth or your most honored ideas of how things should be? Their worth has no measure because all ideas are false distraction. Search the mind for ideas that are given the highest of regard value. Core values he's talking about. Or I'm talking about. I guess I wrote this. But when I sit here reading it, I'm listening to some wisdom. I don't feel like I wrote it, you know. Okay, here's what I'm talking about here. Yeah. Okay. Search the mind for ideas that are given the highest of regard value. Search for all esteemed and honored thoughts and ideas, and then notice them as attachments that block truth. Look at them with this realization and let all honor, all esteem, all value fade and disappear. And as Paul Harvey would say, and here's the rest of the story regarding my honesty story, when Spirit did show me, I was able to see that it is true. I mean, I was clearly judging this particular person based on the fact that he was honest, and I could clearly see that it separated him from me, and I could clearly see that it upset me. And so I, although it was very difficult, I it was very difficult to even accept the idea that I needed to let go of honesty as a core value. Again, honesty is a means of judgment. That does not mean I let go of all attempts at self-honesty. I gave my willingness. And somewhere over the next 6 months, I can't tell you where, but somewhere over the next 6 months that was healed. And the reason I know that is I came to have another situation with the exact same person. He was in an email conversation with some people, and the people were upset by what he was saying. They were upset, and they emailed the conversation to me and asked me what my take was on it. You know, they weren't sure that what they were receiving was clarity, and they sent it to me and were asking for, you know, like a second opinion, like you would go to another doctor. They went to another teacher. So I had seen the conversation. Well, lo and behold, he came into ACIM Gather and he was teaching, and he referred to that conversation, but he lied about what he said. He lied. And I was okay with it. So that's how I knew I was healed. Like I was told, it didn't matter to me at all, you know? And that kind of goes back to what I said earlier. You know, I was talking about, you know, if you're in some special place, you know, you're living in like a Buddhist monastery, or you're in some inner circle, or you're hanging out in Tiruvannamalai all the time, you know, sitting by the mountain every day. You know, it's easy to be at peace in some situations. It's easy to have this spiritual high in some situations. But occasionally it's helpful to step into a situation where we know before we would have experienced upset, and to see if that seeming acquired enlightenment, for lack of better words, it's totally made up words here, but you know, that healing, if it holds, if the healing holds. And that's what his second lie gave me the opportunity to see, is that I was healed. And in fact, I've never had a problem with people lying since then, and it doesn't even matter what the lie is. It's just, you know, that's just something that people do. I don't know how else to say it. It doesn't matter. So obviously the dropping of the honesty core value has occurred. All right, so let's scroll down to number 116, which again is just above the dark gray area and on the left, and I will click on the link. And my God, Larry Sire is in the room. The universe is funny today, because maybe I've seen Larry in the room when I teach before, but it has been a very long time. So hello, Larry. Larry and I are dear, dear friends, but our schedules move us in opposite directions. So here is a link, Larry, to number 116. And before I read from number 116 in the journal, I'm going to read from number 116 on page 33 of The Seven Steps to Awakening. And this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. As long as you have all sorts of ideas about yourself, you know yourself through the mist of these ideas. To know yourself as you are, give up all ideas. Again, as long as you have all sorts of ideas about yourself, you know yourself through the mist of these ideas. To know yourself as you are, give up all ideas. So, number 116 in the journal. Who am I? It may be helpful to answer this question by writing down every idea about who I am. How would I describe myself to others? What are my likes, dislikes, history, knowledge, goals, hopes, and dreams? Once I've described myself as honestly as I can, there's that honesty there. Once I've described myself as honestly as I can, look, every idea I've written about who I am is not true. There isn't a single idea about me that is true. These ideas describe the false character self. These ideas believed block the experience of true self. You know, this would be a fun exercise to do, like in a classroom environment. You know, I used to be a corporate trainer, so I can recognize a good classroom exercise when I see one. You know, without telling people where they're going with this, if you just say, okay, I want you to write down who you are, you know, describe yourself for me, write a paper, you know, and let them write for a while, and then say, okay, everybody done? Okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to go back, and I want you to notice what you didn't tell me, because maybe you don't like to tell people those things about you. Right? What didn't you tell me as you just described yourself? Go back again and add that. You know, really, tell me who you are. So now they've got that first stuff that came to the mind, which is for most people typically more glowing. For some people, actually, the dark stuff comes first. And then they've got the stuff that doesn't come first, which for most people would be the darker stuff, but for some that would be the more glowing stuff. Right? But now we've had them really look at both what they're, you know, the more conscious, the stuff they're more willing to see as them, and then the stuff where they had to dig a little deeper. And then say to them what this says. Every idea you have written about yourself is not true. Every single thing you just wrote, it's not true. None of it. There isn't a single idea about you that is true. It's a pretty powerful exercise. Even sitting here imagining it without physically doing it, without us grabbing our pen and paper and taking the time to write, I think we can see that it's a pretty powerful exercise. You know, we can see that we do have ideas about who we are, even ideas that we don't want to tell people, but the main reason we don't want to tell people is because we think that's who we are. And none of them are true. None of them. That's not who we are. So once I've described myself as honestly as I can, look, every idea I've written about who I am is not true. There isn't a single idea about me that is true. These ideas describe the false character self. These ideas believed block the experience of true self. And I noticed that Larry and I are not completely aligned in our schedules because he says he's actually driving and listening on the iPhone. So he's on the run, but he's in the room. Technology. Larry loves technology, and he's even, thanks to Larry, I have an iPad now, and his wife has an iPhone, I have an iPhone. He's helping some of us see the benefits of technology, and there are benefits. You can scroll down to the bottom and to the left and click on number 117 now. I'm going to start in the book at the bottom of page 33 with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Learning words is not enough. You may know the theory, but without the actual experience of yourself as the impersonal and unqualified center of being, love and bliss, mere verbal knowledge is sterile. Learning words is not enough. You may know the theory, but without the actual experience of yourself as the impersonal and unqualified center of being, love and bliss, mere verbal knowledge is sterile. All right, let's go to number 117 in the journal. This actually is somewhat important. Not that all of this isn't, but this seems to be a current cultural fad, and anyone who's in Facebook knows it. We can copy the words of enlightenment. We can use impersonal language when we speak of ourselves. We can talk about loving what is, existing in pure acceptance, and only knowing what arises in this moment. But what is our actual experience? When my source of income disappears, who am I? When a loved one is angry at me, who am I? When others speak badly of me and even more people believe their story, who am I? Without the actual experience of impersonal awareness, unconditional love, and ever-present peace in all circumstances, our words of enlightenment are merely delay, hiding from our own awareness beliefs that need to be seen as untrue. I think it is a fact, as much as there are facts within the illusion. There are no real facts in the illusion. There's only one fact, and that is existence itself. So when I use the word fact and I'm talking about illusion, then it's, you gotta take it to a point with a grain of salt, and yet at the same time listen, kind of doing both at the same time. It's a balancing act. But I think it is a fact that at least presently, maybe in the past, I don't know, but at least presently, the ego is using false enlightenment as a defense mechanism against true awakening. And I think maybe through this wonderful technology, maybe, where we're able to share so much in YouTube and Facebook and email and Twitter and, God knows what else, because I'm not that much into the technology. It's spreading. There are so many people who are talking about their experience of enlightenment. And yet I know you know as well as I do. I know you feel it. It's just not always true. It's a great big denial. It's a great big hiding. And some of us have felt it ourselves. Some of us have fallen into it for a time. Some of us have fallen into it for longer times and woken up from it. Some of us have just felt the edge of it, just felt it trying to pull on us, and then somehow we were able to wake up and move away. And this is part of the reason we know it's there, is because we felt it pulling on us. So again, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier. If there's this idea of enlightenment, this idea of having really healed a lot, this idea of being in bliss, this idea of, you know, I'm here, whatever that means, you know, it might be helpful to go ahead and just move into another situation and see if that's true. You know, am I just feeling all blissed out because of where I am and who I'm around? Or does it require this special place and this special company? Remember Ram Dass, if you think you're enlightened, go stay with your parents for a while. Or maybe your children, or, you know, go back and get a job for a while. Go ahead, see. It actually doesn't take long when you remove yourself from the source of the high. It doesn't take long to fall into a place of self-honesty, which might at first feel kind of like you fell low. But the only reason it feels low is because there's a ego disappointment in the realization that it had been false. What's really happening is that you're getting back in line now. You're getting back in step. You're getting back to a point of self-honesty, a point of being authentic, that is very important to true awakening. So again, number 117 in the journal. We can copy the words of enlightenment. We can use impersonal language when we speak of ourselves. We can talk about loving what is, existing in pure acceptance, and only knowing what arises in this moment. These are all popular phrases, right? But what is our actual experience? When my source of income disappears, who am I? When a loved one is angry at me, who am I? When others speak badly of me, and even more people believe their story, who am I? I know you guys all know the Eckhart Tolle story, or most of you do, because we love the story because we hear the truth in it. I think he was a monk. He was a monk teacher. He had a lot of students. And there was a woman in his village, a young girl actually, who became pregnant. And when her family asked her who impregnated her, it was actually, you know, like the boy next door, but she didn't want to get him in trouble, so she said it was the monk. And so the parents took the child and went to the monk and accused him of being the father and gave him the child. And all the monk said is that so? And as the story goes, over the next year, you know, everyone was appalled at the fakeness of this monk who was having this affair with this young girl and had a baby. All of his followers left him, and he cared for the child. He raised the child for that year as if it was his own, and he loved it dearly. But after a year, the girl, suffering from her lie, confessed to the parents that it was not the monk, it was the boy next door. And the parents, horrified, went to the monk, and they asked for the child back. And the monk just said, "Is that so?" You see, that's a demonstration of, you know, what we will call enlightenment. Again, the word enlightenment doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but sometimes it just seems to be what fills up the space in a sentence. You know, I don't know what else to do. I'm talking. Have to use words. So we're called enlightenment. You know, that's a good demonstration of enlightenment. He was not just this enlightened presence as he was teaching and had his many followers around. When the whole thing came crashing down, he remained fully enlightened. He didn't need things to be a certain way. So when my source of income disappears, who am I? When a loved one is angry at me, who am I? When others speak badly of me and even more people believe their story, who am I? Without the actual experience of impersonal awareness, unconditional love, and ever-present peace in all circumstances, our words of enlightenment are merely delay. Hiding from our own awareness, beliefs that need to be seen as untrue. All right, let's scroll down. And on the left, just above the dark gray area, I think we have time for one more. We'll click on number 118. And, oh my, we only have two more Sri Nisargadatta quotes left. We'll see if we get to them both or if we just have one next time. Here we go, number 118. So many words you have learnt. So many you have spoken. You know everything, but you do not know yourself. For the self is not known through words. Only direct insight will reveal it. Look within. Search within. All right, let's go to number 118 in the journal. Study and learning and talking with others about spiritual teachings has been helpful to this point, but now it is time for something different. It is time to sit with self. It is time to be in stillness without distraction. It is time to watch the ego without any reaction, mental, emotional, or physical. It is time to realize self and be present in realization. It is time to sit. And I think that you all know that I'm in a year, this year, of much less activity. It's not no activity, but much less activity, and therefore more time for sitting, for being in contemplation, for being still. And it does feel like that it is time for that for me now. And I think that's all I have to say about that. So I guess we will get this last quote done. So let's scroll down. And above the dark gray area on the left, click on number 119. This is the last Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj quote for step one. And he said, "Whatever you can know with your mind is of the mind, not you. Whatever you can know with your mind is of the mind, not you." So number 119 in the journal. Who am I? Any answer that comes from mind is not true. It doesn't matter if the ideas are of a physical nature or of a spiritual nature. All ideas are ideas and equally untrue. I cannot know myself through ideas. I cannot describe myself with ideas. Release every idea that comes and ask, who am I? Now, you know, many of us, maybe everyone in this room, has gone through A Course in Miracles as a part of our spiritual path. And A Course in Miracles does teach us ideas about who we are, right? I am the Son of God. I am the light of the world. What else am I? Anybody think of anything else? I am spirit. You know, we have these words that we learn from A Course in Miracles. And the truth is, one thing that does seem to happen as we awaken is that old, wrong-minded ideas are temporarily replaced with new, right-minded ideas. But it's a mistake to think that those new right-minded ideas are truth. They're merely bridges. They're merely trying to turn our direction from looking totally in the wrong direction at the fault self and believing that's who we are, and starting to turn our eyes in the right direction so we can begin to be magnetically pulled that way. But if I say, I am the Son of God, I am spirit, I am free, I am, you know, the light of the world, that's not true either. All ideas are not true. They may be helpful transitions, helpful in prying us away from the way we used to think before so that our mind has a new openness, so that we can begin to receive some true enlightenment. But they're not true. There is not a single thing that we can express about our true self that is true. If it can be said, it's not true. It's not absolute truth. So who am I? I mean, if you're at the point where you're practicing self-inquiry, you do not want the mind to give you an answer like, I am spirit, and say, yeah. You want to disregard every idea the mind gives. Self-inquiry is actually a process of learning to disregard the mind. So you ask, who am I? And any answer that comes from mind is not true. It doesn't matter if the ideas are of a physical nature, I am woman, or of a spiritual nature, I am the light of the world. All ideas are ideas and equally untrue. I cannot know myself through ideas. I can't. I cannot describe myself with ideas. Release every idea that comes. This is the practice of self-inquiry. Release every idea that comes and ask, who am I? Just keep asking until the experience answers. All right, that's it. I'm done for the day. I'll see you guys on Friday with Lynn. Oh, and tomorrow I'm on the radio at noon Eastern time with John Troy and Trip Overholt, and Dove will be broadcasting it here in the room. So in that way, I'll be here tomorrow. Bye.